From Altoona to Danville, Camp Hill to Indiana, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, June is budget month in Harrisburg as lawmakers and Governor Shapiro work to complete a new state spending plan by the constitutional deadline of June 30th. David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom are here with a Capital Watch look at the key issues in the budget debate. And the left will do anything to prevent the funding of educational options for children in the state's most underperforming schools. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Troubles at the Pennsylvania Game Commission boiled over during a recent state House hearing, during which lawmakers assailed the agency for failing to make significant progress in dealing with issues revealed during an audit back in 2019. The commission's former executive director, Brian Berhans, resigned after it was revealed he had a business relationship with several commission employees. He also faced criticism for spending $10,000 per month on a lobbyist. According to the Center Square, no state agency has done so since 2007. The commission was also heavily criticized for using paper checks rather than electronic transfers, delaying the deposit of royalty revenue. The agency was also criticized for reportedly having a toxic work culture. Lawmakers from both parties are demanding reform. The number of mail-in ballots rejected because of voter error declined during the recent primary election. Spotlight PA reports state officials are taking credit for the decline, pointing to a modified ballot return envelope that makes it less likely for a voter to make a mistake. Counties rejected 9.6% fewer mail-in ballots in the 2024 primary compared to last year's primary election. Election law in Pennsylvania requires mail-in voters to place their ballot in a secrecy envelope before placing it in the return envelope. That return envelope must be signed and dated for the ballot to be counted. In what could become yet another benefit from fracking in Pennsylvania, research conducted by a University of Pittsburgh doctoral student found significant quantities of lithium could be extracted from the wastewater generated in the fracking process. Lithium is used in batteries for everything from electric vehicles to smartwatches. The researcher estimated lithium from wastewater generated by fracking in the Marcellus Shale play could supply 30 to 40% of the nation's lithium needs. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. We are now just 3 weeks away from the deadline for adoption of a new Pennsylvania state budget, and lawmakers are divided along party lines over spending more or cutting taxes. Here with analysis is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Stephen Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
You're listening to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, great to see you.
Great to be here again, Dave. Thank you.
And also around the table, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure to be here, David.
So, the usual nonsense is going on as expected in Pennsylvania's state capital. We're now in the month of June, is the month during which the state budget, the general fund budget is supposed to be developed. One of the things that happened was that Governor Josh Shapiro announced the new state tourism model, saying that Pennsylvania is the great American getaway and that the governor, is the first one to get away because he's going to be spending the next couple of weeks more or less on tour, promoting the tourism motto and stopping off at various sites and locations. And he's not going to be personally present in the state capitol to help negotiate the budget. Steve, isn't that strange?
It seems a bit strange, but You know, Governor Shapiro is now in his – this is his second budget cycle. And in the first budget cycle, he did have I think you would call it a lot of deference for the legislative leaders in both chambers to try to work things out. And then he was going to – you know, whatever they worked out would be something he would actively get involved with. But it really never came to that. And it ended up that there was a very fractured budget process mm-hmm. that lasted from June all the way into December.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have thought that perhaps that would be a signal to Governor Shapiro to get more hands-on involved with the budget process. But again, there was an AP story I read just this morning that mentioned that he was not only has been traveling, but plans to continue doing a lot of traveling during June. And June is the time when the governor and his team would normally be in Harrisburg knocking heads with legislative leaders to work out some sort of a compromise that could be enacted by the Republican-controlled Senate and the Democratic-controlled House and signed by the governor.
Right.
So this idea that he is wandering the state instead is a little bit unnerving. And the idea of the new getaway slogan, what it is again, you said it was
great American,
getaway. I mean, Pennsylvania has been hemorrhaging people mm-hmm. for decades now. We lose a congressional seat every census because relative to other states, we're losing people.
Right.
They're moving away.
Mm-hmm.
And statistics show much of it has to do with the high tax, high regulation environment here in Pennsylvania. So we're losing people. It's a great American getaway, but unfortunately, they're getting away from Pennsylvania, coming here.
Yes. It's a great Pennsylvania getaway.
Yeah, that's not so good. So,
no.
Rebecca, what's your take on things? What have you seen going on?
Yeah, I mean, the governor announced his budget proposal a few months ago, back in February, I believe it was. And like you said, typically then the governor will be here in the month of June to push for his budget priorities. And if he's not here pushing for his budget priorities, which he's committed to, then I just wonder who is, who's on the ground, you know, making a case for what's important to him. So if he's not in town doing that, then
who is he delegated it to?
Yeah, who's he delegated to? Who are the players in the room that are discussing these huge policy issues that we have before us?
And of course, the governor has had quite a number of spending proposals that the Commonwealth does have a pretty good reserve and the rainy day fund, and then excess funds beyond that, totaling about $14 billion, as I understand it, and that, you know, the governor's put forward any number of different ways that he would like to, you know, spend some or most of that. And it was interesting where the Senate Republicans decided to push back by deploying a tax relief package to say, look, if there's money being held here, you know, spending it isn't the only option. We could actually give some of it back to the people who paid in. And I guess I would ask, you know, my distinguished friends here, how do you think that's recatalyzed the discussion? Do you think that's changed things, or are we still going to be facing the same pressure for higher spending?
Well, certainly the fact that the bill you discussed, the reduction in existing Pennsylvania taxes to the tune of $3 billion, yeah, that changes the conversation because many Democrats in the Senate ended up voting for it.
Right.
It received essentially a veto-proof majority,
right,
because all the Republicans and several of the Democrats joined on. Politically, that tells you something. It tells you that. And we know this from polling.
Right.
People in Pennsylvania are scared. They're disturbed about, in particular, the economic conditions and in particular inflation.
Right.
And that has been it's stressing Pennsylvania citizens out. And I think that translates politically to people absolutely relating to the idea of some sort of tax relief program.
Right.
But certainly not relating to the idea of raising taxes in any way, shape, or form.
Right. Right. What are your thoughts, Rebecca?
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree completely. But to the point of the budget surplus, I mean, I just saw today the governor's budget office came out with an announcement again. There's a budget surplus in collections last month. Again, we are running a surplus. And with the $14 billion surplus that we're looking at right now, I think there are a lot of Pennsylvanians out there, like Steve said, that are struggling. And you know, a lot of folks are thinking, if the government has collected too much of my money, maybe I should get some of it back.
Right.
So I think that is a sort of a game changer for the Senate Republicans to start that conversation and actually talk about lowering taxes, which, as we know, almost never happens in Pennsylvania.
Right.
So lowering the personal income tax is a great way to sort of kick things off and get that started.
Right. And also the plan would reduce the state's personal income tax from 3.07 to 2.8%, and it would also eliminate the gross receipts tax on electricity.
Right.
And again, that would be something that would help the ratepayers with their monthly utility bills.
Yeah, and the gross receipts tax too, just to add, I think that is one of the most onerous taxes that you can put on anybody, because it's invisible to mm-hmm. people. It's not at all transparent. Usually when you're paying tax on something, it's a line item on your bill. The gross receipts tax is a tax that's levied sort of behind the scenes, and mm-hmm. it layers on top of lots of things. So you're paying this energy tax on all the products you buy, the services in electricity, and you can't see it anywhere. So it just compounds the sort of the pressure on prices. So getting rid of that gross receipts tax, I think, would really help things out in energy for sure.
Yeah. And I do believe that the just everyday folks, people who are, I mean, many Pennsylvanians are, you know, just going paycheck to paycheck, trying to make ends meet month by month. And that when you have inflation driving up the price of, filling your gas tank, of, paying your utility bills, of buying groceries, that, you know, people are hurting, and that this would be a way to provide direct relief to everyone at once, as opposed to, say, Governor Shapiro's plan to impose a new carbon tax on electricity generation and then use the proceeds to give people some of the money back to offset the increase in prices.
And it's part, and we kind of joked about that, the Great American Getaway idea, but it's truly important that Pennsylvania citizens are under financial strain. And part of that is coming from the overly burdensome tax structure. So a tax refund program of any kind is going to have a real impact, and it may be the difference between families moving away or staying here in our Commonwealth, which affects us all. And if you don't have that, you know, we've had struggles for upwards of a decade now in terms of workforce, and not an adequate number of people available to fill the thousands of jobs that are available. I know, David, you often cite the vacancy in manufacturing positions. I think it's 6,000 some people.
Yeah, I mean, and it's probably
jobs.
Higher than that. That's a rolling total, but at any given time, there's more than 6,000 open manufacturing positions. And there's another key statistic. This comes from our friends at the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry, that the U.S. Chamber reports that for every 100 jobs in Pennsylvania, there are 74 workers.
Yes, and that's disturbing, and a lot of those jobs are critical. They're in power production. They're in the medical field. They're in engineering. Things that are mission critical to having a good organized infrastructure in our state.
Right. Right. Absolutely. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. So we're going to be moving deeper into the month of June, closer to the constitutional deadline of June 30. And I'll be interested to see how things play out, because the governor was asked about I forget which particular issue it was, but his statement was more or less, well, you know, the House Democrats and the Senate Republicans, they've got to get together and figure it out. Well, don't you need to have like the chief executive as part of that conversation too?
Well, certainly if he intends to then sign that budget, it's going to be his budget. You would think that he would be actively involved in negotiating the parameters to make sure that his priorities are in it in a way that he's going to ultimately be able to sign into law and not have to line item veto certain provisions as he goes forward, as happened in the last budget cycle.
Do we have any sense of what his, you know, what his urgent priorities are? I mean, he's proposed all kinds of different ideas, but in terms of the things that he really has to have, do we know what that list looks like?
I can't say that I know what that list looks like. He has really not, as you said, he's talked a lot about a lot of ideas, and often he'll talk about them for a week or so and then put them away. But it isn't as if the problems have been solved that he's raised. He's just talked about, hey, we need to do something about this, and then let it go. So It's not clear if he has stated his priorities behind the scenes to other parties that will be at the table negotiating. I've heard again this week, here we are in the beginning of June, that no formal negotiations are actually happening yet. And we're only, you know, 3.5-4 weeks out from the deadline.
Yeah.
And that's not a good sign.
No, sir. No, sir. Well, and it was State Senator Joe Pittman from Indiana County, who's the Senate majority leader, that he was asked about the budget situation and dealing with the State House, and that I believe Senator Pittman's exact phrase was, "It's not my job to make Matt Bradford happy," referring to the Democrat House majority leader. So, I mean, that was surprisingly pugnacious from Senator Pittman, who's usually pretty, you know, pretty steady fellow. And of course, you know, Representative Bradford is the one who blew up the deal that the governor had put in place for the Lifeline scholarships to help kids get out of the worst 15% of schools in Pennsylvania.
And that same program, for example, Lifeline scholarships, it's back on the agenda for this year. It's part of the debate. And we know that Kim Ward, the Senate President Pro Tem, has been talking about the importance of Lifeline scholarships in any budget deal that is made. And certainly Leader Pittman has also been a supporter of the Lifeline scholarship program in the context of the budget. So that is not going away. That's going to be an issue again. And the governor has been – his comments about Lifeline scholarships have been positive down the line. So – he's acknowledging the importance of it and the fact that there got to be some immediate relief for these kids who are stuck in the worst performing schools in the state and have no prospect to get a good education unless they get out of those schools. So this is not – it's a political issue, but it's an urgent issue in terms of quality of life for thousands and thousands of Pennsylvania school students.
And their families and the people who love those kids, because those young people are – you know, they're living out their youth in real time. You know that as we learned with the pandemic and the school shutdown, that you know, those days for a young person, once they're gone, they're gone.
Well, yeah, and we talk about the need for workers in the Commonwealth and folks to fill the job vacancies that we have now. And those kids are our future. That's who we're going to need to step up and fulfill those roles in our economy.
Right.
So we need to make an investment in them for sure.
And that those students deserve to have a learning experience that is challenging, that is rigorous, that is meaningful, and that it prepares them for success in life, including success in the workplace.
And here we are in Pennsylvania. We spend a lot of money on public education. We spend upwards of $22,000 per student.
Per year.
Per year on education. And yet, nearly half of Pennsylvania's fourth and eighth graders cannot read at grade level. And more than half of fourth graders and nearly 75% of eighth graders cannot perform math at grade level. That's the tragedy here unfolding in our midst.
And Steve, I know that was a lot. Can you please just repeat that slowly?
Sure. So nearly half of Pennsylvania's fourth and eighth graders cannot read at grade level. And more than half of fourth graders and nearly 75% of eighth graders cannot perform math at grade level.
Well, and that's terrifying, because those are fundamentals to be numerate, to be literate. You know, these are the capabilities that are necessary to grapple then with more complex ideas and concepts and challenges. If you can't do math, if you can't read and write, you know, you're condemned to failure. And this is just not acceptable.
And there are certainly many schools in Pennsylvania, many public schools, that do an excellent job of educating students. But tragically, there are many that are not doing a great job. And again, these are the bottom 15% performing schools, where you're seeing year after year, decade after decade, in many cases, of chronic school failure.
Yeah.
And it's those kids who are getting robbed. They're literally getting robbed of an opportunity to have a better life and an economically productive life and a stable life.
Yeah. And again, with the amount of money that is being spent, there's no good reason why those kids need to be condemned to being in a bad school. You know, and of course, also that the notion that, you know, that one size fits all is, you know, it should be a thing of the past. I mean, we have so many choices in the course of daily life, and, you know, with our retirement funds and investment decisions and different vehicles to use. And again, you know, where you want to live, and, you know, you can customize absolutely everything, you know, down to the last degree, except something that's as fundamental as the educational experience that your kid gets.
Yeah. And it's almost as if you can't even imagine this sort of a system operating with respect to other types of goods and services.
Right.
It would be laughed out of town. It would fail. It would be
– yeah. It's like,
just – it's ridiculous.
It's like Henry Ford said 100 years ago, with the Model T, you can have it in any color you want as long as it's black.
Exactly. And now look at the options and opportunities we have just in the automotive field.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, infinite. Absolutely
infinite.
And what if
the government had backed that up and said, you know, Henry Ford, you're right. We're going to pass a law. All cars must be black.
You know, and of course, the business community is going to be you know, watching for any number of things. Of course, the overall spend number is going to be important, because even though we talk about having, you know, money in the bank and all these reserves, those, I mean, a lot of those the dollars come from the printing press in Washington, and that those are non-recurring funds, and that, you know, we have, as the listeners always hear, we have a structural deficit, that we have not enough people in their productive years, and we have more and more people beyond their working years. And so we need to make sure that we don't just blow that cash, but that if it is deployed, it's deployed in such a way that it bends the curve on our trajectory to, you know, to close that structural deficit. Well, anyway, that's pretty much all the time that we have for this week's program. And so as we're watching it tick down, Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org on the internet.
Wonderful. Rebecca, where can people find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And for Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. June is the start of meteorological summer, a time when the kids get out of school, teachers get a well-deserved break, and Americans flock to the ocean and lake shores to relax and reconnect with family and friends. Under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg, the vibe is very different. June is budget month. Governor Josh Shapiro and lawmakers are required to have the new spending plan in place by June 30th. Although everyone involved is well aware of the deadline, it is frequently missed. The budget-making process has been underway for months. Governor Shapiro delivered his budget address back in February. Legislators in both the Senate and House have held weeks of budget hearings. A flurry of news releases designed to pander to political bases have been issued, and the battle lines are drawn. The process now moves behind closed doors, where the governor and legislative leaders will hash out the budget details. As a result of federal funding, supposedly to help states fiscally weather the COVID-19 pandemic, Pennsylvania has a hefty budget surplus. It is estimated to be at nearly $14 billion by the end of this month. Oddly, it is more difficult to reach a budget consensus in years when the state has a surplus than when it faces a deficit. Governor Shapiro and legislative Democrats have put on the table a number of big spending proposals. The danger therein is continuing that higher level of funding in future years after the surplus has been spent. For their part, Republicans want to give taxpayers some relief. The GOP-controlled Senate actually got bipartisan support for reducing the state's personal income tax, which the Commonwealth Foundation estimates will leave about $900 additional dollars in the average family's wallet. State Representative Rob Mercury of Allegheny County has proposed giving taxpayers a $1,000 taxpayer dividend rebate check. While these larger issues are being hashed out, it may once again be a comparatively small budget item that grinds the process to a halt. Last year, Governor Shapiro's first budget, all appeared to be progressing smoothly. There was an air of cooperation between him and Senate Republican leaders. The Senate GOP agreed to more spending than they wanted. The governor, in turn, agreed to the Senate's top priority, the Pennsylvania Award for Student Success, PASS, also known as Lifeline Scholarships. According to the Commonwealth Foundation, the program would offer an Education Opportunity Account, or EOA, to any student assigned to a school ranked in the bottom 15% of performance. In other words, it would give the poorest students in the worst schools a literal educational lifeline by providing the funding needed to attend another school of their choosing. In a 2023 budget of $45.5 billion, the PASS program would cost just $103.7 million, a fraction of the $1.1 billion increase in public school spending contained in that budget. Powerful special interest groups led by the Pennsylvania State Education Association, or PSEA, intervened and pressured lawmakers to not approve PASS. House Majority Leader Matt Bradford only agreed to bring the budget to the floor for a vote after securing a commitment from Shapiro to line-item veto the program. Shapiro agreed, broke his deal with Senate Republicans, bringing the era of good feelings to an abrupt end. The result was an extended budget crisis and the consignment of thousands of schoolchildren to yet another year of substandard education. Once again this year, Senate Republicans are seeking to fund the PASS program. But the left is dug in. The degree to which they are willing to fight against providing educational opportunities to economically disadvantaged children was on full display recently when Erin McClellan, the Democrat nominee for state treasurer, worshipped at the altar of the PSEA, pledging to fight school vouchers by refusing to sign any checks for that purpose unless ordered to by the state Supreme Court. In one of the more forgettable chapters of Pennsylvania political history, I was the Republican nominee for state treasurer in 1992. As such, I am well acquainted with the powers and duties of that office, and the state treasurer has no power to withhold payment of funds duly approved by the legislature and signed into law by the governor. In addition to revealing a fundamental lack of understanding of the powers and duties of the office for which he is running, McClellan's statement is just one example of how far the left is willing to go to trap minority students in underperforming schools. And so, as folks bask at the shore or enjoy the Great American Getaway here in Penn's Woods, expect budget month to become budget summer. The decisions made in the air-conditioned back rooms of the Capitol will determine what remains in our wallets and whether or not thousands of schoolchildren will finally be given the opportunity to succeed. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WFYL-AM in Jeffersonville, WIOO-FM and WHYL-FM in Carlisle, along with WEJS-AM in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.